Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Selling Greenville, your favorite real estate podcast here in Greenville, South Carolina. I'm your host, as always, Stan McCune, realtor right here in Greenville, South Carolina, and you can find all of my contact information in the show notes if you need to reach out to me for any of your local real estate needs. And please, if you like this content, if you like this show, please subscribe. Make sure you don't miss future episodes, whatever, whether you're watching on YouTube or whether you're listening on Spotify, Apple, hit the little subscribe button. And if you can, like, leave a rating, leave a review, leave a comment on YouTube. All of those things help this show. It's a very small way to just thank me. And even if you're never going to use me as your realtor, maybe you are a realtor, you can still do that. And that's just a little thank you. So I would appreciate it. Some of you guys thank me offline, right, in a phone call or in person. But I would appreciate those actual thank yous to actually come in through the proper channels. So if you don't mind doing that, that would be wonderful. Last week, I did a 10-point guide on buying a home in Greenville. Today, I'm doing a 10-point guide this week, 10-point guide on selling a home in Greenville. And of course, I say Greenville, really it's the upstate, not just Greenville. If you're in Spartanburg, if you're in Pickens, if you're in Anderson, Oconee, Greenwood, these principles all apply to you as well. Lawrence County, same thing. Sorry, I didn't mean to leave out Lawrence County there. Someone's going to scream at me because of that. But yeah, this applies to the entire upstate of South Carolina. It's just, if I don't say Greenville, it's not going to get into the algorithm as much as it should. And so basically, and I need to give this reminder a lot, but a lot of this stuff is going to be good principles for whether you're selling a home anywhere, but it's very specific to Greenville because I only know the Greenville market, right? And the greater Greenville market. I don't know what the market's like in Austin or Boise or San Francisco or Miami. They're all a little bit different. And in some cases, a lot different. What I know is local. It's specific to this market. And hopefully this home selling guide will help you specifically in this market. And if it helps you outside of the market, that's great too. But number one, we're just going to jump right in here. The number one thing I would say, and these aren't necessarily in any particular order, but this one probably is just the number one thing. Know your competition. And this is something that's lost on a lot of home sellers. Some do get it, to their credit, but a lot don't, is that you're not competing with the comps, right? A lot of people are just like, well, the home down the street sold, you know, a year and a half ago for this price, and home values have gone up by X amount, therefore my home is worth such and so. None of that really matters, because people aren't looking at the home that was sold a year and a half ago. They're not looking at homes that were sold 6 months ago. Now buyers will look at comps, right, to kind of assess, okay, is this home overpriced? And of course, every buyer thinks every listing is overpriced, with very few exceptions. And so they're going to use the comps against you if they can. They're certainly not going to use it if it works in your favor. So if a comp does work in your favor, just understand that buyers are going to ignore it. But what buyers are going to be paying the most attention to is what your competition is. What's your competition? It's the other homes that are for sale, specifically homes inside your neighborhood. If you're in a neighborhood, or if you're, you know, within a certain radius, within a mile, a half mile, maybe even a few miles out, that's your competition. Outside the neighborhood, again, a few miles out, particularly if your home has like unique features, you might have to go a few miles out to really like see what the competition is. Maybe you're a much larger home than any of the homes in that area. You know, a few years ago, I sold my house that was in Chartwell Estates, which is a production-built neighborhood in Greer. And we had one of only, I think it was four, basement homes in that neighborhood. And the last basement home that had sold in that neighborhood was our home when we had bought it. And so it was very difficult to price that home out. I had to go outside the neighborhood to assess, okay, what other basement homes are in this area? And there really weren't a whole lot. And so that was kind of how we had to approach that. But also right now, and this is where my caveat about this being very specific to Greenville is very important. And again, I've talked about this over and over and over again, so I'm sorry to beat a dead horse here, but the dead horse is everywhere, and that is new construction. Okay, new construction for a lot of people selling homes, particularly if you're selling a home below $500,000, you are competing with new construction. That is like your number one competition right now, because they're cheaper than your home, obviously newer, cleaner, like perfect. At least they look perfect. They might not be as well built as your home. They might not have all the upgrades of your home, but then they've got all of these incentives that they're offering as well. And you have to consider, you know what, am I actually competing with the new construction that's around here? And with that, you even have to go out a further radius than what you normally would when assessing what your competition is, because some people are going to end up going a little bit further to get that new construction that's cheaper, that's newer, that has all those various closing cost incentives and whatnot. And I mean, I'm telling you guys, this is a big, big deal. If you don't factor in that you are competing with new construction, it might look completely different than your home. It doesn't matter. It's all about affordability right now. And new construction is quite frankly more affordable in a lot of ways than a lot of existing homes. And if you've got new construction within just a few miles of your home, you need to factor that in. Now, if it's like a townhome community and you're selling a single family detached home, that's different. We're not going to be comparing. It still has to be at least somewhat comparable. But generally speaking, you need to be very, very aware of new construction and aware of your competition as a whole. And be honest. Be honest about what the competition offers that you don't. That is so, so important, because I can't tell you how many times I meet with sellers and they want to sell me on their home. You don't need to sell me on your home. I'm not going to buy it. Like, my marketing for your home isn't going to change based on what you tell me, right? I am going to identify what things your home has to offer that is going to be attractive to the market. Now, that's not to say that I don't want to hear things from my seller clients as to what they love about a home and maybe some things that it aren't obvious on first glance, right? Maybe they have some kind of a French drain system that they installed in recent years that I wouldn't have known. Maybe the roof, you know, is brand new and I can tell it's in good shape, but I don't know that it's brand new. You know, things like that are very helpful. But at the end of the day, you don't need to sell me on your home. And oftentimes when I have those conversations, I can tell the seller has already concluded, whether they're trying to talk themselves into it or whether they actually believe it, that their home is just better than all of the competition. And they're always wrong when they say that. There's always something out there that's better. Like, you have to start from that basis point. Start with the understanding, okay, my home is not the best home on the market, or won't be the best home on the market at this price point, and then go from there, right? If you'd be better off being overly critical, and then that will allow you to start thinking about your home like a buyer will be thinking about your home. It's not being overly critical just for the sake of being overly critical. No, buyers are overly critical right now, and you want to think like them and not just default to the thoughts that make you comfortable, that make you feel good about your home. Think about it critically. Don't let that criticism affect you negatively. Let it then be like, okay, after you've had that moment of really being critical, then all right, now what? Now that I know what the competition is, here is what they have that we don't. And that could be maybe conditions of the home, size of the home, maybe some of the lender incentives, such as what new construction is offering. Like, assess all of those things that they have that you don't. And then at that point in time, we can come up with a strategy of like, okay, here's how to undercut all of those homes that have something that your home doesn't have to offer. And of course, that's what I do as a real estate professional. I'm not telling you that you have to do it, but I'm saying this is a good practice. And if only your realtor does it, if you're not open to it, you're going to resist. You're going to feel like your realtor is being very critical. You're going to feel like your realtor hates your home. Don't think about it that way. If your realtor is being critical, they're just trying to help make you have a realistic understanding of what your home is going to look like to buyers out there. There's nothing wrong with that. That's literally what you're hiring a realtor for. If your realtor only tells you what you want to hear, you need to fire that realtor right now. Go ahead and fire them because they don't have your best interest in mind. They're just trying to get a listing. And they think that the best way to do that is to be agreeable with you. Bad, bad idea. Don't go with someone like that. All right, number two. And I've kind of already alluded to this. Understand that the market is very, very critical right now. I mean, it is brutal. Even though, you know, I said last week we are in a soft seller's market, it doesn't matter from a standpoint of buyers still being critical. They have more homes, you know, available to them than they have for many, many years, and they feel like they can be critical. So if your home has flaws, right, it needs new paint, it's dirty, needs to be pressure washed, the landscaping has not been done in quite some time, listen, buyers will immediately get turned off to your home. Pictures might be great. Marketing might be great. They walk in and they're like, ugh, this just feels gross to me. I can't tell you how often I experience that on both sides, right? I have buyers that are like that. And then I've had listings where buyers just critique the daylights out of it and just things that to me are things that can be fixed, right? If it needs a deep clean, it needs a deep clean. Like, no big deal. Buy it and then hire a deep cleaner. Whatever. Get it for the price, factor in the deep cleaning into the price, and move on. But buyers aren't being logical right now. They're being very illogical. And so you have to circumvent that illogical approach that they have by getting out in front of the misconceptions and the concerns that they might have. An example that I have from one of my own clients yesteryear is they would look at every single oven. They would open every single oven. Which, by the way, be prepared for that. Be prepared for your appliances to be opened, for people to go snooping around in there. That's just going to happen. But they'd look at every single oven, and if an oven was dirty, they'd kind of be like, yeah, we don't like this house. I didn't get that, right? Because an oven, obviously you can clean it. If you can't clean it, you can replace it, right? For fairly inexpensive in comparison to the cost of a home. And these people were capable. Like, it wasn't like a financial problem. They could have bought a new oven or had an old one cleaned or whatever. But they were just ruling out houses on the basis of the ovens being dirty. As a realtor, I try to help my clients be more logical than that. But at the end of the day, it's their decision, right? It is their decision what they value in a home. And if they value a clean oven, it's not my job to say you shouldn't value that up to a certain point. Like, I'll explain, well, you know, you could do this. And if they're just like, no, we don't want to do it, I've done my part as a realtor. I've given them their options, but at the end of the day, they are the boss. They know what they want when it comes to buying a home. And it's not my job to tell them, I'm sorry, but you don't want that, right? Again, up to a certain point. I try to do that until I realize that, oh, no, actually, this is a major, major thing for them, and they're not going to be happy if they buy the home with this perceived issue. And so at that point, then I back off and just factor in, okay, one of their criteria that they didn't originally tell me was that the house also has to have a perfectly clean oven. And that's just it. Sometimes the criteria doesn't make sense, but you've got to consider this. When you're selling, you need to try to button up as many things as you can with regard to your home in order to make it presentable to buyers and to circumvent the concerns that they may have. Number three, this one's going to surprise some people, I think. When interviewing realtors, resist the urge to ask them what your home is worth. That's oftentimes one of the first questions that I get when I do a listing presentations. Well, what do you think the home is worth? Really don't like answering that question because A, what it's worth today might not be what it's worth 2 months from now for a variety of reasons. Could go up, could go down. We don't know what will happen. But once I tell them a number, they're going to have that number kind of in their mind for eternity, right? Until they list their home. But more importantly, a lot of people will use that question and the response to that question as a major factor in determining which realtor they're going to use. And that's a really, really bad practice because any realtor can list a home for any price. But it's the marketing that a realtor does that separates one realtor from the other. So in my marketing, I do Zillow Showcase, which not very many agents do, for every single listing. I have a digital ad campaign that I do that goes out to a bunch of different websites, not just real estate websites, but other websites like CNN, MSNBC, whatnot, where you actually, you know, your home gets published using artificial intelligence on other websites that people, that AI assesses that people are looking for homes in your area, and then, you know, just pushes that out to them. A bunch of social media marketing. Obviously, I do professional photography, drone photography, twilight photography, which sometimes I use, sometimes I don't. And a whole lot more than that, right? That's just kind of the starting point. I'm not going to do my whole spiel to you guys. If you're interested, we can have that conversation offline. But you get the point. Like, all right, ask the realtor, okay, are you going to use professional photography? What multiple listing services are you going to list this home in? What sort of ad campaigns are you going to do? What kind of marketing are you going to do? What kind of a sign are you going to put in my front yard? You know, are you going to do open houses? Like, these are the sorts of questions that you need to be asking to assess one realtor from the other. The question you shouldn't be asking is, well, how much are you going to list my home for? First off, I don't get to decide that at the end of the day, right? I am the person that ultimately presses the button to list your home, but I don't just arbitrarily decide, well, this client, you know, their home is worth $500,000 according to my research. So that's what we're going to list it for. Like, no, you have to agree on that too, right? This is a two-way street. This is a two-way conversation. And so usually the way I approach that, once someone's decided to work with me, we do all of the research. We look at not just the comps, right, but the competition, which we just talked about in point number one, and we take all of that into consideration. And I do one extra step that I don't know too many other realtors that do this. And so if you're a realtor, I'm revealing my hand to you right now. I enter all the information into the multiple listing service regarding the house. And then the multiple listing service has a pricing tool that when I press the button, it tells me how many buyers are matched in the multiple listing service with that house at that price point. And then I can go up or down on the price. And again, it's in the multiple listing service, but only visible to me. So it's not active yet. And so I can actually see in real time, well, if we list it at this price, here's how many buyers it hits. If we list it at that price, here's how many buyers it hits. And there is a number that I want to get to. And in terms of how many buyers it hits. And if we don't get there, then I'm going to warn my clients about that. And that can really help to inform, I feel like more so than anything, really helps to inform what a home is like actually worth, because that's actually, you're actually pairing it with real buyers in the multiple listing service. There's no tool more powerful than that. And I'm sure there are other agents that do something like that. But this has become standard practice for me. And this is something I'm doing for all of my listings at this point. And so again, that's right at the end. Like, what does it matter if I tell you what I think your home is worth months before you're going to list it? We need to figure that out at the end. You need to base your interviews off of what realtors' marketing strategies are. Number four, remember that the market determines your home value, not you, okay? So the art of pricing a home at the end of the day is trying to determine what the market value is, not what you think it is worth based on all of the TLC, all of the updates, all of the things that you put, all of the blood, sweat, and tears you put into your home. Buyers don't care about any of that, right? That's your story. Everyone has a story with their home. And that's your story, and that's great. Like, that's valuable, that's good. That I like to know that as a realtor. Buyers don't care. What buyers are doing is they're looking at your home and the condition it's in, the updates it's in, the size, the location, all of that, and just comparing it to all the other homes that are at a similar price point. That's all they're doing. And so, you know, so often the sellers are like, well, I bought the home for this price. I did all of these updates to it that cost, who knows what, $100,000, we'll just say. Plus, Betsy down the road also sold her house for this amount. She didn't have all of these things. And I know that, you know, that I can sell my house for more than that. No, it's really not that simple. Like, first off, I don't know anything about Betsy's home right now. I need to do some more digging into that. Oftentimes, you know, again, people are more critical of their neighbors' homes than they should be because they're trying to sell me on how valuable their home is, and I don't need to be sold on it. Sorry to keep beating that dead horse. But at the end of the day, it's the market that decides. It's not even me, right? I don't decide how much your home is worth. I project, but it's the market. The buyers, the actual physical buyers that are out there, they are the ones that determine what your home is actually worth. And everything else is just hearsay. And so remember that. Remember that you don't get to make that decision. I don't get to make that decision. Nobody gets to make that decision except the buyers. So the whole art of pricing a home is trying to figure out what will buyers right now, right here and now in this market, think your home is worth. And that's exactly why I use that pricing tool, because that is real-time hard data in the actual multiple listing service. Like, there's literally no better way to do it. There's no better way to get that data. Now, what I'm not going to do is I'm not going to share with you the number of buyers that I want to hit in that pricing tool. Some of you might know that. Some of you I might have shared that with. But if you're a realtor, you've got to be on my real estate team in order for me to share that with you and to give you that little strategy. I got you to the starting line. It's up to you to get to the finish line if you're a realtor listening to this. With regard to that pricing tool. All right, number five, home values, again, to stick to pricing, because this is a big part. You know, this is what when people are selling homes, they're always wanting to talk about what their home is worth. And I've already alluded to this, but home values are ranges, not precise numbers. And appraisers, by the way, will tell you this as well. We had a great conversation with Chris White, an appraiser, I believe it was last year. And we talked a little bit about this on the podcast. I've talked about it with him offline as well. But home values are a range. Like, anyone that says your home is worth exactly this number, that, like, no. Nobody can determine that. Because, again, the market decides that. Not research. Research cannot tell you a precise number. It can tell you a range. And so that's what I try to determine. Here's what the range is. And then I'll make a recommendation within that range on what I would say that you should list your house at. And that's, again, based on all the research that I've done. But it's also based on the seller strategy, right? Because everyone wants to list their home at the top end of the range, right? For obvious reasons. You want to get as much bang for your buck. But that might not make sense for your strategy. If you need a quick sale, for instance, you need to list at the lower end of the range. And you know, based on where the market is, you might need to list at the lower end of the range. There's a lot of considerations. That's a separate conversation that I have. But just understand, there's no like one number that if any realtor says your home is worth exactly this amount, they don't know what they're talking about. That is simply not how the market works. And you'll get neighbors that tell you that too. You know, one thing that neighbors love to say is, oh, that home is underpriced. They always disagree. They'll even say it's overpriced. Normally, they say it's underpriced. They're always wrong. Like, again, they don't get to set the market. They don't get to tell you what the value is any more than you or I do. It's literally what the market says the home is worth. That's what it is worth. Number six, staging. Okay? Get questions about staging all the time. Here's my thought about staging. It's helpful, but it isn't the end-all be-all. Now, almost anyone living in their home, if they're selling a home that they are currently living in, they have to declutter and depersonalize. And that alone is usually adequate staging. Now, some homes could use some other things, and that's a conversation that I have with my clients at the time that we're assessing the home and all of that. But generally speaking, you don't need to get professional staging for the most part in a home. Now, the question I get most often is, well, what about vacant homes, right? Do vacant homes need to be staged? And I will say this, it does help, but buyers are used to seeing vacant homes. And so, is it necessary? Are you going to get back the thousands of dollars that you pay to stage your home? I don't think so. In my personal opinion, I disagree specifically in this market with that strategy. Now, you might see online that, well, staging adds, you know, XYZ value to your home. And that might be true in aggregate. I have not seen any evidence that that's true in the Greenville market. And anyone that wants to provide that data for me to prove me wrong, I will admit that I'm wrong if you can prove me wrong. But I've not seen any data. I've not personally, in my experience with selling homes, seen that staging benefits or makes that big of a difference, with one major exception. And that is if a home has some unique things with regard to the floor plan, where it's like kind of hard to like kind of determine, okay, well, what do I do with this space? If it's got a unique space that's just challenging when you're walking through to like figure out what could this be used for? It's just like empty space. And if you can give that space utility, whereas right now it just kind of looks like useless empty space, like a loft, for instance. A lot of lofts, you know, you go through them and it's just like, well, what am I going to do with this? It's just open air. And, you know, if you can find a way to give that loft utility, you have added value to the home. And so staging can be helpful in that regard. But again, those are somewhat few and far in between. You also have the option for virtual staging, which is obviously substantially cheaper, where you're just, you know, having someone put furniture, virtual furniture, in the photos of a listing, which we are allowed to do. That could be an option. There are mixed opinions on that. For me personally, I think, again, if it's a space that's just like this big space that just doesn't show well on the photos, it could make sense. But for the most part, I don't think it's that helpful. Number 7, open houses. Okay. This is also a conversation that comes up a lot. And here's what I want you to understand. Homes don't often sell at open houses, right? But even though homes don't usually sell at open houses, that doesn't mean that they aren't useful in certain situations, okay? Now, there's all sorts of, you hear all sorts of different debates and strategies over how to do open houses, and when to do them. Some people are just like, you need to list every house on Thursday or Friday and do a Saturday or Sunday open house for every single listing. Every time I've heard someone say that, it is an agent saying that for their own benefit. Okay, they do the open house because they want to meet more buyers that might be unrepresented. And so they do the open house strategy, not because they think it's going to sell the home, but because they think it's going to get them more clients. Listen, I'm sorry. I'm being brutally honest here. That is the truth. Because homes almost never, ever sell at open houses. Now, couple exceptions, right? I'm not saying never use an open house. Here's when I use them. A, I use them for generating buzz if I had a listing that had to take a price reduction. And we have had a few of these the past few years. Most homes are having price reductions right now. The vast majority have to reduce the price at least once before they go under contract. And so what's nice is if you can do a price reduction, and here's, by the way, one other thing I do that's a bit the extra mile that others don't. I completely, when I'm doing a price reduction for my clients, I completely delist the home, take it off the market, and relist it at the new price. Now, is that gimmicky? Yeah. Does that eliminate the days on market on the MLS? No. People can still see how many days it's been on the market. But it does look like a new listing, and it does work. Okay. I've got multiple clients. I can tell you story after story after story where I've done this. And right away after relisting the home, we get it under contract. Now, would that have had the same effect had we just lowered the price? I don't know. I tend to not think that. I tend to think that a big part of that was that I took it off the market and relisted it, and it reappeared in people's feeds and looked like a new listing. And what I'll also frequently do is I'll change the first photo. So that way, perhaps they had gotten used to seeing that front photo of the house. Well, now they're looking at a slightly different photo, and it's like, oh, it gets their attention. They might be like, oh, this looks like a new one. And then they click on it, and then they realize, well, it's not a new one. It's the same one, but, oh, they relisted it. And maybe there's some other subtle little changes in there. Sometimes I'll rearrange the photos internally as well to kind of prioritize some things and deprioritize other things. So anyway, long story short, that's something that I do. And oftentimes, not all the time, but oftentimes in conjunction with that, I will also do an open house in order to generate buzz, right? That's a new marketing thing. That's something else that I can throw out there that kind of gets people thinking about it. It's like, oh, wow, okay, and they're also doing an open house. Maybe I should go just pop in, just kind of see what's going on with this house. And that strategy has worked many, many times for me over the years. I'll also do an open house if I have a listing that I just need feedback on, right? You know, it's a listing that I've had a lot of traffic or maybe haven't had any traffic on, and I need to figure out why isn't anyone moving on this house? Like, what's going on? And sometimes I can get some really, really valuable feedback that way, from just having random people, maybe people even within the neighborhood, just looky-loos coming through. I can hear different opinions, and then I can bring that feedback back to my clients and say, hey, here's what I got direct feedback from the market. Here's what the market is telling us. I've seen situations where people even chose their listing agent. This is absurd to me, but I've seen situations where people chose their listing agent strictly on the basis of whether they would do an open house or not. I think that that's a really bad single issue to get parked on. Again, open houses typically don't sell homes. So why are you so obsessed with an open house? But I've heard of this before, and I even got a listing a few years ago because I was willing to do an open house when the other agent that was in the mix wasn't willing to do it. And I don't normally do an open house on the opening weekend, but I did for them because that was important to that client. So I did it. And if you want an open house on your opening weekend, I will make that happen in order to get your house listed and fulfill your wishes. But just understand, it's rare that actually benefits the house in terms of selling. With one exception, right? There is one major, major exception with regard to me not doing the initial open house for the opening weekend. I will do it frequently if I have a client that's really, really, they need to move their house quick. And maybe they have another home under contract that they're buying and it's contingent on the sale of this house. And we just need to do a full court press, get it out there for that opening weekend. And immediately see, okay, what kind of activity level, what kind of buzz are we getting? I had to do that for a listing I had towards the end of last year, and it worked out perfectly. We got the most incredible weather of the entire winter that weekend. It was the second busiest open house I've ever had, and that open house actually did directly result in multiple offers. Very, very rare situation, right? Almost never, ever happens, but it did in that specific instance. And part of that was that, the client agreed to price the home kind of more towards the lower end of the range, as we talked about, in order to make sure that they didn't overprice it and then find themselves kind of scrambling to sell their home when they were trying to buy the next one. And so that's a lot of stuff with regard to open houses, but that's kind of my open book and what I think about those things. Number eight, you've got to know if you're a seller in the Greenville market that the average listing takes roughly 2 months to sell. And if you want to sell faster than that, again, you need to have a home that is better than average, right? Think about this. The average listing takes 2 months to sell. If you want to sell faster than that, it's really simple. Your home has to be better than average in some ways. Like, wow, my math teacher never taught me this sort of math, right? And for some of you, you might just be like, yeah, that's common sense. I get that a lot, right? People are always just like, oh yeah, I know that. They know that until they want to sell their house, right? And again, actually be honest. That's so important. You got to think about it. In my area, is my house above average? Or is it merely average or maybe even below? Nobody thinks their house is below average. So is it just merely average or is it actually above average? In what way is my house better than all these other homes that are taking 60 plus days to sell? And so if you do a logical and honest assessment and find that your home is merely average, then you have to price it aggressively below, maybe even below average, in order to beat that 2-month average of going under contract, right? You've got to think about this. If your home is average and you just price it right, you know, at the average price point for what your home would get, it's going to take 2 months to sell on average. These are all just averages. Could you beat that? Yeah. Would that be because you had a good process, a good plan in place? No. Just happening to sell your average home at an above average rate, right? At a quicker rate than everyone else. Like, you lucked into that. And so these are the sorts of things that you need to think through. And again, being critical about your house will benefit you a lot more than being overly optimistic when it comes to selling. Number 9, be prepared to pay for buyer's closing costs. Guess what happens when a bunch of builders start throwing around $15,000, $20,000 in closing cost assistance, et cetera, flex cash, all this stuff. All the builders are doing it. And so buyers just get used to it. And they basically, if they're not used to it, once they start assessing their options, they say, you know, I don't really want to have to wait for a new build, which is what I hear over and over again. But the next thing they say is, I'd be an idiot to pass this up. This is a better use of my money than I can find anywhere on the resale market. And, you know, I can't tell you how many times my own buyers have come to this conclusion. So I end up helping them with new construction. Happy to do that. More than happy to do that. The builders, you know, they don't always play nice with realtors in a major, major seller's market. Builders tend to get, you know, to not play nice with realtors. But in a market like this, they want to work with us. They're sending us emails all the time, offering us all these bonuses, going crazy, trying to get realtors to sell their homes. And so so at the end of the day, you need to realize, again, these builders are a big part of your competition. And so how do you undercut them, right? You have to play the game that they're playing. You can't think, well, I'm going to do everything different than them and have the same success as them. No, you've got to play their game. And their game is affordability. They figured it out. Builders are very, very efficient home sellers. And so they figured out, well, people can't afford things. So what we're going to do is we're going to price very competitively and then offer to pay for a bunch of closing costs and or upgrades and or all these other things. And you've got one major, major advantage on your side. You know what that is? That is that you can sell your home right now. And that's actually a huge advantage, but you have to get over the other hurdles because people don't want to wait for a builder to build their home and to take 4 to 5 months. They don't. They want to buy their house right now, right? When they're looking, they're ready to buy. They're ready to move right now. And so, but you've got to leverage that advantage by undercutting the builders on all these other things. And you've got to be prepared to pay for closing costs. And, you know, at the end of the day, my opinion is you should probably just get out in front of that on the front end and just basically be willing to offer that on the front end. Again, if you want to sell your home quickly. Now, maybe you're not as motivated of a seller. Maybe you're just like, no, we can wait and see. You know, if we get offers at full price, not ask for closing costs. But be open to, you know, give me permission at least, if I have an agent come along and say, hey, are they willing to help with closing costs at all? That I'm able to say, yeah, they're willing to do that with a reasonable offer. I just had a listing fairly recently, like had some of the most showings I've ever had on a listing without it going under contract. And it just kept getting second place. and had some great buyer agents that showed the house and submitted some great feedback to me that told me over and over again, you're getting second place to new construction because of they're offering closing cost assistance. So finally, you know, after we'd had enough showings without any offers that it was like, okay, this is going to continue to be a problem, I went back to my clients and just explained to them, okay, here's why your home's not selling, despite all of these showings. It was crazy, actually. I've never had a listing quite like that in terms of just not going under contract, despite tons and tons of showings. There was one thing that people didn't like about the house itself, but the biggest thing was it just kept losing out to new construction. And so what we did was we relisted it, again, took it off the market, relisted it, changed some photos around and whatnot, and then started offering closing cost concessions according to my client's wishes. And then I blasted that out to every single person that had shown that home as well. I blasted it out to my entire company. I blasted it out to as many people as possible, and we got it under contract a week later. And it was within range of what my clients were hoping to get for the home. So everything worked out. So you need to consider that as a major strategy. Number 10, last on our list for today, remember that even though it is a soft seller's market, as I said last week, that doesn't mean that you get to make demands on the market, right? You're saying, well, hey, you said it's a seller's market. I'm the boss here. I've got all the leverage in a seller's market. No, not a soft seller's market. You do have some leverage. I've already spoken a little bit to that. But if you start making demands and think you can just throw your weight around like people were doing in between 2020 and 2022, you're going to have problems, right? Well, I want to sell as is. Market this home as an as-is sale. Yeah, sure you want to sell as is. And I'd like to win the lottery as well. I'd like to win the Powerball. Wouldn't we all? Listen, buyers are already really cynical. And if a seller appears to be demanding and is like, we're going to sell this as is, and we're not including appliances, and you're going to have to do this and that and the other thing, that almost always turns off buyers, and it hurts the marketability of your home. Don't do that. Don't tell your listing agent to say this is an as-is sale unless the home is in really bad condition and you're pricing it accordingly, right? Because as soon as you put those words as-is in the listing, you just told the entire market, whether it's true or not, that your home has problems. Yep. You just told the entire market that your home has problems, and additionally, you've told them that you're an unreasonable seller. That might not be true, but you've communicated that. You know, you might have a spouse, a lot of us do, that are just like, well, it's not what you said, it was the way you said it. It's the same thing, right? Think about it. Think about it from that perspective. Like, you can say, well, listen, we really don't want to do a ton of repairs. Okay, that's fine. But don't put the words as is in there. The way you said that just told the market something that you didn't mean to communicate to them. You told them this house is in bad condition. And if that's not true, then you're hurting the marketability of your house. Now, if you tell me to put those words in there, I will put them in there, right? I'll push back. I'll tell you why I don't recommend that. But if you're just like, no, we want those words in there, I have to obey you as my client. That's one of the six things that we have to do in the old car abbreviation. Obedience is number one in there. If you're a realtor, you know exactly what I'm talking about. There's some other professions out there that use that old car acronym. We have to show obedience towards our clients. That's an example. So don't do it. Don't do it. Don't make your realtor obey you in a way that's going to hurt the marketability of your house. That's a bad idea. And that's why you hire a realtor that you trust, that you believe in, that you like, and that you think has your best interest in mind, because they will do that. And anything that you do that hurts the marketability of your home, it's just crushing in a market like this. Because again, you know, it's a soft seller's market, but there are some pockets around here that feel like a buyer's market, right? For a variety of reasons. Home values haven't gone up in certain areas. And you know, new construction is hurting home values in certain areas. So again, even within this market, there are little pockets that are even different than some of the things that I'm saying. I'm talking like big picture here. But long story short, you've got to be careful making demands on the market. There's not a lot of demands that sellers can make right now that don't turn off buyers. So just be careful. Like, yeah, the time to get demanding is when you actually get that offer. You want to get an offer first, and then you can be demanding in your negotiation. That's a much better way. You still have to be careful there. That's much better than being demanding or appearing demanding in the listing itself, because you're probably going to limit the number of offers that you get that way. So I hope those 10 points were helpful for you guys. Thank you so much for listening. Tomorrow, I'm going to Columbia, South Carolina for another little realtor conference. And if you're a realtor listening to this and you're going to be there, well, actually, this is going, by the time this is released, I will have already returned from the conference. So it's just a little, like a 1.5 day conference. But I'm looking forward to that. I'm going to see some people there that I know and have good relationships with. So that should be fun. I don't know if I'll have anything to tell you guys from that next week, but I might. We'll see. So thank you so much for listening. Please like, rate, review, subscribe. If you need a realtor, my contact information is in the show notes. We will talk again next time.